Well, I won't. But I hate to see things going all crisscross and getting snarled up, when a pull here and a snip there would straighten it out. I wish wearing flat irons on our heads would keep us from growing up. But buds will be roses, and kittens cats, more's the pity. What's that about flat irons and cats? Asked Meg, as she crept into the room with a finished letter in her hand. Only one of my stupid speeches. I'm going to bed. Come, Peggy, said Jo, unfolding herself like an animated puzzle. Quite right, and beautifully written. Please add that I send my love to John, said Mrs. March, as she glanced over the letter and gave it back. Do you call him John? Asked Meg, smiling, with her innocent eyes looking down into her mother's. Yes, he has been like a son to us, and we are very fond of him, replied Mrs. March, returning the look with a keen one. I'm glad of that. He is so lonely. Good night, Mother dear. It is so inexpressibly comfortable to have you here, was Meg's answer. The kiss her mother gave her was a very tender one, and as she went away, Mrs. March said, with a mixture of satisfaction and regret, she does not love John yet, but will soon learn to. Chapter 21 Laurie Makes Mischief and Jo Makes Peace. Jo's face was a study next day, for the secret rather weighed upon her, and she found it hard not to look mysterious and important. Meg observed it, but did not trouble herself to make inquiries, for she had learned that the best way to manage Jo was by the law of contraries. So she felt sure of being told everything if she did not ask. She was rather surprised, therefore, when the silence remained unbroken, and Jo assumed a patronizing air, which decidedly aggravated Meg, who in her turn assumed an air of dignified reserve and devoted herself to her mother. This left Jo to her own devices, for Mrs. March had taken her place as nurse and bade her rest, exercise, and amuse herself after her long confinement. Amy being gone, Laurie was her only refuge, and much as she enjoyed his society, she rather dreaded him just then, for he was an incorrigible tease, and she feared he would coax her secret from her. She was quite right, for the mischief-loving lad no sooner suspected a mystery than he set himself to find it out, and led Jo a trying life of it. He wheedled, bribed, ridiculed, threatened, and scolded, affected indifference, that he might surprise the truth from her, declared he knew, then that he didn't care, and at last, by dint of perseverance, he satisfied himself that it concerned Meg and Mr. Brooke. Feeling indignant that he was not taken into his tutor's confidence, he set his wits to work to devise some proper retaliation for the slight. Meg, meanwhile, had apparently forgotten the matter and was absorbed in preparations for her father's return. But all of a sudden a change seemed to come over her, and for a day or two she was quite unlike herself. She started when spoken to, blushed when looked at, was very quiet, and sat over her sewing with a timid, troubled look on her face. To her mother's inquiries she answered that she was quite well, and Jo's she silenced by begging to be let alone. She feels it in the air. Love, I mean. And she's going very fast. She's got most of the symptoms, is twittery and cross, doesn't eat, lies awake, and mopes in corners. I caught her singing that song he gave her. And once she said, John, as you do, and then turned as red as a poppy. Whatever shall we do? Said Jo, looking ready for any measures, however violent. Nothing but wait. Let her alone, be kind and patient. And father's coming will settle everything, replied her mother. Here's a note to you, Meg. All sealed up. How odd. Teddy never seals mine, said Jo next day, as she distributed the contents of the little post office. Mrs. March and Jo were deep in their own affairs, when a sound from Meg made them look up to see her staring at her note with a frightened face. My child, what is it? cried her mother, running to her, while Joe tried to take the paper which had done the mischief. "It's all a mistake. He didn't send it. Oh, Joe, how could you do it?" And Meg hid her face in her hands, crying as if her heart was quite broken. "Me? I've done nothing. What's she talking about?" cried Joe, bewildered. Meg's mild eyes kindled with anger as she pulled a crumpled note from her pocket and threw it at Joe, saying reproachfully, "You wrote it, and that bad boy helped you. How could you be so rude, so mean and cruel to us both?" Joe hardly heard her, for she and her mother were reading the note, which was written in a peculiar hand. "My dearest Margaret, I can no longer restrain my passion, and must know my fate before I return. I dare not tell your parents yet, but I think they would consent if they knew that we adored one another. Mr. Lawrence will help me to some good place, and then, my sweet girl, you will make me happy. I implore you to say nothing to your family yet, but to send one word of hope through Larry to your devoted John." "Oh, the little villain! That's the way he meant to pay me for keeping my word to mother. I'll give him a hearty scolding and bring him over to beg pardon," cried Joe, burning to execute immediate justice. But her mother held her back, saying, with a look she seldom wore, "Stop, Joe. You must clear yourself first. You have played so many pranks that I am afraid you have had a hand in this." "On my word, Mother, I haven't. I never saw that note before, and don't know anything about it as true as I live," said Joe, so earnestly that they believed her. "If I had taken part in it, I'd have done it better than this, and have written a sensible note. I should think you'd have known Mr. Brooke wouldn't write such stuff as that," she added, scornfully tossing down the paper. "It's like his writing," faltered Meg, comparing it with the note in her hand. "Oh, Meg, you didn't answer it," cried Mrs. March quickly. "Yes, I did." And Meg hid her face again, overcome with shame. "Here's a scrape. Do let me bring that wicked boy over to explain and be lectured. I can't rest till I get hold of him." And Joe made for the door again. "Hush! Let me manage this, for it is worse than I thought. Margaret, tell me the whole story," commanded Mrs. March, sitting down by Meg, yet keeping hold of Joe lest she should fly off. "I received the first letter from Laurie, who didn't look as if he knew anything about it," began Meg, without looking up. "I was worried at first, and meant to tell you. Then I remembered how you liked Mr. Brooke, so I thought you wouldn't mind if I kept my little secret for a few days. I'm so silly that I like to think no one knew, and while I was deciding what to say, I felt like the girls in books who have such things to do. Forgive me, Mother. I'm paid for my silliness now. I never can look him in the face again." "What did you say to him?" asked Mrs. March. "I only said I was too young to do anything about it yet, that I didn't wish to have secrets from you, and he must speak to Father. I was very grateful for his kindness, and would be his friend, but nothing more for a long while." Mrs. March smiled, as if well pleased, and Joe clapped her hands, exclaiming with a laugh, "You are almost equal to Caroline Percy, who was a pattern of prudence. Tell on, Meg. What did he say to that?" "He writes in a different way entirely, telling me that he never sent any love letter at all, and is very sorry that my roguish sister, Jo, should take such liberties with our names. It's very kind and respectful, but think how dreadful for me." Meg leaned against her mother, looking the image of despair, and Joe tramped about the room, calling Laurie names. All of a sudden she stopped, caught up the two notes, and after looking at them closely, said decidedly, "I don't believe Brooke ever saw either of these letters. Teddy wrote both, and keeps yours to crow over me with just because I wouldn't tell him my secret." "Don't have any secrets, Joe. Tell it to Mother and keep out of trouble, as I should have done," said Meg warningly. bless you, child. Mother told me. That will do, Joe. I'll comfort Meg while you go and get Laurie. I shall sift the matter to the bottom and put a stop to such pranks at once.